You're listening to Lace Up with your host, VJ Johnson II. Grab your tennis shoes, get your cleats, because it's time to lace up. What's going on, everybody? Welcome to Lace Up. I'm your host, VJ Johnson II, ready to give you the latest, hottest news and updates in the world of sports. I appreciate everybody jumping in and joining the podcast right now and giving me a little bit of your time to talk some good, healthy sports talk as always. Man, I hope everybody had a great week. It's finally here, man, the weekend, full and jam-packed for college football and the NFL, man. And not only that, man, we got the ALDS series and the NLDS series going on in Major League Baseball. We also have right around the corner the NBA that's going to be tipping off on next Tuesday. So just an exciting time for a sports fan. And I hope everybody's weekend, last weekend was great, man. I had a great time. I actually went down to Tuscaloosa to my alma mater, University of Alabama. I hadn't been to campus in 3 years, man, so it was an exciting time. Had a great time with my fellow alumni. Now, Texas A&M did give us a scare, and they gave us a run for our money, but the squad hung in there, and they were able to get the tough win. So proud of the boys, and Roll Tide always, man. But, hey, let's jump into things, man. We got a lot of good stuff to talk about on today's show, man. First and foremost, man, let's kick it off in college football. Let's look at the new AP Top 25 poll. Now, I'm not going to go through all 25. I think I did that last show, but this time I'm just going to focus on the top 10 right now. Just kind of, you know, tell you guys what's going on right there. And then we'll discuss the biggest matchups for this upcoming weekend in college football. So as it stands in the top 10 right now, you got Georgia, who's number one, who's a new number one now. Ohio State is number two. Alabama's three. Clemson is four. Michigan is five. Tennessee is 6, USC is 7, Oklahoma State is 8, Ole Miss is 9, and Penn State is 10. So just to look at the trends in the poll this week, UGA and Ohio State moved up one spot apiece. Bama actually dropped down two spots after the close game against Texas A&M. Clemson moved up one spot, Michigan went down one spot, and then Tennessee actually moved up two spots. So a lot of movement going on in the poll this past week. And looking at it, honestly, you know, I'm always that person that says, like, you know, everything is going to work itself out. I was surprised that they decided to move Bama down two spots to three. I could understand them moving them down, I guess, after that close game. But, you know, nobody gives Alabama the benefit of the doubt at all. But, you know, it is what it is. I mean, I'm actually okay with Alabama being at three. You know, like I said, as long as you handle business, regardless of where you're ranked right now, it all plays itself out. You just got to worry about going 1-0 each and every week. But I personally do not feel like Ohio State is better than Alabama. I mean, I get them putting Georgia up there at one. Cool, fine. But Ohio State, eh. I don't know about that. But, like I said, it's cool. SEC is represented well in this top 10. I mean, we got, what, four teams in the top 10 right now. So, that's pretty solid for the SEC. So, I mean, look, I'm just excited to see how everything's going to play out. And you got the Big Ten with three teams up there in the top 25 as well. So look, man. Hey, let's look at the big matchups for this week. So first, you got number 10 Penn State, who's going on the road to face number 5 Michigan. So Michigan actually is opening this game as a 7-point favorite, and the over-under in this one is 49 points. Let's look at the leaders for both the Michigan Wolverines and the Penn State Nittany Lions. So you got, on the Michigan side, you got quarterback J.J. McCarthy, who's 94-120 right now. 1,152 yards and 9 touchdowns on the season. Running back Blake Corum, 118 carries, 735 yards and 11 touchdowns right now. And you got wide receiver Ronnie Bell, who has 30 receptions, 390 yards and 1 touchdown on the season. And on the Penn State side, you got their quarterback Sean Clifford. He's 85 of 137, 1,030 yards and 9 touchdowns on the season. They're led by running back Nicholas Singleton, who has 63 total carries for 463 yards and 5 touchdowns. And then their wide receiver, Parker Washington, who has 20 receptions and 285 yards, but no touchdowns on the year as of yet. And moving on, man, the second matchup that I have my eyes on is number 8 Oklahoma State going on the road to face number 13 TCU. Now, TCU is actually a 4-point favorite in this game, and the over-under in this one is 68.5. Looking at the leaders for both these teams on Oklahoma State, you have their quarterback Spencer Sanders, who's 104 for 169 for 1,394 yards and 12 touchdowns on the year so far. Then they're led by their running back Dominique Richardson, who has 86 carries for 355 yards and 4 touchdowns. And then wide receiver Braden Johnson, 17 receptions, 360 yards and 3 touchdowns on the year. And then you look at TCU. TCU, they're led by their quarterback, Max Duggan, and he's 93 of 127, 1,305 yards and 14 touchdowns. Running back Keandre Miller, who's 69 carries, 474 yards and 6 touchdowns. And then wide receiver Quentin Johnston, 26 receptions, 320 yards and 1 touchdown. And last but not least, I had to save the best for the last. You got the number 3 Alabama Crimson Tide going on the road against the number 6 Tennessee Volunteers. Now, Alabama opened as a 9-point, well, they actually opened as a 7-point favorite, and that actually moved up to 9 points over the last couple of days, and the over-under in this game is 66. Looking at the leaders on Alabama's side, you got Bryce Young, who's 90 of 134, 1,202 yards and 14 touchdowns so far on the year. Their running back, Jahmyr Gibbs, 64 carries, 532 yards and 2 touchdowns. And wide receiver, Trayshawn Holden, leading the team with 18 receptions, 223 yards and 4 touchdowns on the year. Then you look at Tennessee, quarterback Hendon Hooker, 98 for 140 for 1,432 yards and 10 touchdowns. A running back, Jalen Wright, 67 carries, 315 yards and 4 touchdowns. And finally, their wide receiver, Jalen Hyatt, 27 receptions, 388 yards, and 5 touchdowns. So those are, again, the biggest matchups that I'm looking at this upcoming weekend. And I know we also have what could turn out to be a pretty solid game. You got Mississippi State and Kentucky that'll be matching up against each other. And then you got number 7 USC that's going to be going on the road to play number 20 Utah. And USC is actually an underdog in that game, so definitely got to watch out and keep your eyes out for that one. Because USC, they're a 3.5-point underdog. I mean, that's not a huge underdog, but definitely want to keep your eyes on that one, because that could turn out being a pretty a solid game. Could be USC could be on upset alert now. You never know. Utah usually has, over these past few years, they've had pretty solid teams. So we'll see what happens in that one. Let's move on, man. Let's take it to the NFL, really football in general. Let's talk about penalties. So, biggest question right now, man, are penalties ruining the game of football in the NFL and college? Are these penalties ruining football? The answer to this question is yes. These recent penalties, they're messing up the game. Officiating has been absolutely terrible this year. I mean, it's been awful, man. I mean, but I will say this. I think that it has more of a impact and an effect on the NFL than it does on college football. And the reason why I say that is, let's look at both leagues, okay? You got, in college football, there's a system in place where the refs, they can make whatever call that they want, whatever call they feel is the right call on the field, right? So if they see a fumble, what they think is a fumble, they're going to call it a fumble. If they see a roughing the passer, okay, they can call the roughing the passer. If they see what they think is targeting, they can call the targeting. And then what they will do after that is, they have the opportunity to utilize the replay to get the call right. So they call what they think it is on the field. They go to the replay booth. was this the correct call? If it was, okay, we're leaving it there. If it was not, okay, let's change it. In the NFL, they made so many outrageous calls, and they don't utilize the replay consistently to right their wrongs. I mean, let's look at the biggest one, the most recent one that we just saw on this past weekend with Grady Jarrett and the sack that he had against Tom Brady, and being called for roughing the passer in that situation for making a legal tackle. That was absolutely ridiculous. I mean, that was the worst call. That was one of the worst calls I've ever seen in my life. I mean, that we've all seen in our lives. Like, you cannot sit up here and tell me that a legal tackle, literally a legal tackle, he wrapped Tom Brady up and he threw him to the ground like anybody else would have in that situation. And the referees, and the problem, here's the biggest issue. The referees want 300 plus defensive linemen to turn into Superman midair and just float away and just let quarterbacks go and just not touch them at all. Like, that, they want them to do what's physically impossible. And my biggest question is, like, what do you expect them to do when you're already engaged in a tackle? Like I said, this is not like this was a helmet-to-helmet situation or where he was standing straight up and Tom Brady threw the ball and then he dipped down late at his knees or his ankles or anything like that. This was nowhere near anything like that. He got in the backfield. He wrapped up Tom Brady. Tom Brady got sacked. And then he got mad and kicked him afterwards, which he was actually fined for. I want to say it was like 10 or I can't remember how much the fine was. I think it was like 10 or 11,000, something like that. They just came out and told him, you know, recently this week that he was going to be fined for that. But that's it. It literally just waters down the game. And it's very frustrating to see that as a fan. And especially in that game where the Atlanta Falcons, they were actually down 21-0 and they battled back and brought it to 21-15. So in that situation, that was a critical situation because you have an opportunity. Like I said, that was a third down. They get the ball back with an opportunity to drive the ball down the field and take a lead in this game. And look, I'm not going to sit up here and say that, oh, the Falcons would have won the game, you know, if they got the ball back. We don't know that, but you stripped them of the opportunity to be able to get the ball. And when they had momentum, like, as a football fan, regardless if you're a Falcons fan or a Buccaneers fan, no, regardless of whoever your team is, you can look at that and you can say, look, that was completely ridiculous. I mean, we all know it. we all know that was a horrible call. And then let's not talk about what happened on Monday Night Football with the Raiders and the Chiefs, where they called a roughing the passer when the defender, I want to say it was Chris Jones. I can't remember if it was Chris Jones from Kansas City or whoever it was, but they hit Derek Carr, took the ball from him, which is a fumble. They knocked the ball out of his hands. He fumbled, and as they fall to the ground, they ended up calling a roughing the passer call. As they were already falling to the ground after he had stripped the ball and he fell on top of him, they called that roughing the passer. Like, what do you, that's a joke, man. Like, I get trying to protect the players, but it's getting excessive now. Like, they need to look at what they're doing in college. And like I said, and I can't even finish my thoughts. It's so annoying. The biggest thing that's the most irritating to me is, like, they'll come out the next day, like, they'll come out Monday morning after making like a crazy call like that, like what happened in the Falcons and the Buccaneers game, and they'll come out and they say, look, oh, we stand by our decision to make that call. Of course you do, like, because it's not gonna make you look, it'll make you look bad to say, like, we really screwed that up, we got that wrong. But how about taking ownership for screwing up football games? How about let's do that? Like, I don't know where they got these refs for this year, but they need to go have a meeting or something. Like, they need to come together, because you can't continue to put football fans through stuff like that, man. Look at what the what they're doing on the college level, utilizing a replay when they make a bad call and going and correcting the call. It's simple. But they pick and choose when they want to do that. So that's what's killing the game right now. But you know what? Hey, let's move on. Let's talk about the NLDS series right now between the Atlanta Braves and the Philadelphia Phillies. So right now, the Braves are currently down 2-1 in the NLDS. So question here, man, what do the Braves have to do to win this series? So what we're going to do is we're going to backtrack. We're going to look at game one, game two, and game three, and then we're going to talk about what is going to be the recipe for victory for the Atlanta Braves to be able to, again, win game four and ultimately win this series. So, okay, game one. Phillies ended up winning at 7-6. Max Fried actually got the nod as the starting pitcher for the Atlanta Braves. So the Braves were down 7-3 heading into the ninth inning. And Matt Olson, he actually ended up hitting a 3-run home run to make it 7-6. So they were still in striking distance, but it was a little too late. And you know, like I said, they weren't able to cash in on another run in the ninth and ended up losing it 7-6. And the Braves gave up 12 hits in that game. So game two, Kyle Wright, he ended up getting the nod as the starting pitcher for the Braves. The Braves ended up winning that three to zero, to tie the series up 1-1. Now all three of the Braves' runs came in the sixth inning. So Matt Olson singled, and he brought in Ronald Acuna Jr. Austin Riley hit an infield single, and Dansby Swanson ended up scoring. And then Travis d'Arnaud singled, and Matt Olson ended up scoring. So those were your three runs from the Braves, and they were able to seal that victory. And then you had game three. So game three, Spencer Strider got the nod as the pitcher for the Braves. The Phillies ended up winning this one 9-1 to take a 2-1 series lead. So the Braves ended up giving up 6 runs in the third inning. So started this game off, just didn't start good. And they also gave up 3 runs in the seventh inning. So Rhys Hockins, he hit a 3-run home run in the third. And that was followed by a 2-run home run by Bryce Harper in the third as well. So those were your games 1, 2, and 3. So those are the recaps. So let's talk about what the Braves need to do going forward. So first and foremost, biggest thing that needs to improve is the pitching. I mean, the Braves, they've given up 16 runs on 23 hits in 3 games. Like, that cannot happen. Like, they got to figure this thing out. And you, listen, pitching, it will kill you. It will kill you. You cannot allow the Phillies to stand up there and tee off, like, on your pick. Like, you cannot allow them to do that. But this is a team, they're a really good team. They can hit the ball now, as we can see. Now, you cannot make it easy on them. They have to, look, this pitching needs to get better. They got to mix some things up. They cannot allow other games when you're giving up 10, 11, 12 hits in a game. Like, you cannot do that. Okay? Like, they have to find a way to fix that. Secondly, they need to take advantage of runners in scoring position. So I'm seeing too many runners being left stranded. I mean, they were fifth in RBIs in all of baseball this year. So the Braves, look, act like it. Fifth in RBIs. Look, get the runners in scoring position and bring them in, man. Y'all got to find a way to get some runs. I mean, the Braves are more than capable of rallying and putting up runs on the board, especially when they get people in scoring position. The Braves they usually do really well with bringing the runners in, man. So just let's get back to that. Take advantage of these opportunities. Because again, we know in baseball, look, it's not like those chances come around. Like in certain games, you have those games where it's like, okay, you get two on and no outs. All right, we need to find a way to get to really cash in on this because you never know. You know, baseball is tricky. And then last but not least, man, the leaders on the team, they gotta step up and make some big time plays. Ronald Acuña Jr., Matt Olson, they were number one and number two in batting average in all of baseball. Hey, look, I know that obviously one or two players don't make a team, but, you know, who's going to step up and who's going to put the team on their back? Who's going to bring that energy? And I'm not just saying that from a standpoint like, okay, Acuña and Matt Olson got to get up there and they each need to hit 2 to 3 home runs apiece. I'm not even look, from a leadership standpoint, who's going to get fired up out there? Who's going to bring that life and that energy? You know what I mean? Like in the dugout, like somebody has to step up and look, let's go. Look, the Braves are more than capable of getting this thing done. And I think that we will see them respond in the next game, game 4. I think they'll tie the series up. And then I think that game 5 ends up coming back to Atlanta, if I'm not mistaken. Game 5 would be in Atlanta. Let me double check that. So make sure I'm correct on that because I don't want to give y'all any wrong information. But yes, game 5 would be in Atlanta. So the Braves, look, this is a must-win game or the series is over. So game 4 is actually on Saturday. So, whew, got to buckle up. And Charlie Morton is actually getting the nod as the starter pitcher for the Braves in game 4. So Braves, let's get it done, man. Let's get this thing back to Atlanta and close this thing out, man. Let's get it done. All right, let's take it to the NBA. Okay, let's look at what's the biggest story that's come out of the NBA, and I think y'all know where I'm getting ready to go. Let's talk about Draymond Green in the Golden State Warriors. So, did the Warriors make the right choice by not suspending Draymond Green? So let's look at the whole situation. Okay, so Draymond Green, he returned to practice on Thursday. He spent the week away from the team. After he punched Jordan Poole during an altercation at practice last Wednesday. And that video of him being punched was actually leaked, and it actually quickly went viral, of course, around the internet. So, which it was, man, he laid Jordan Poole out. I mean, that was vicious. Like, that was a vicious punch. The Warriors decided not to suspend Draymond, but they instead fined him internally. So we don't know how much that fine is. Like, we don't know how much. They haven't said anything about it. Draymond actually played in the final preseason game against the Nuggets, and he's also going to be available opening night against the Lakers on Tuesday. Green came out and said that, you know, the team, obviously they had conversations about what they need to do moving forward, and that they aren't going to hold on to the past. And the Warriors actually had meetings with the front office, the coaches, and the players. Obviously, Steph was involved. Andre Iguodala was involved. Jordan Poole was involved. Before they ultimately decide to welcome Green back. And Poole was one of the players who approved the decision to bring Draymond Green back. Believe it or not, he was actually one of the people that approved of it. Now, head coach Steve Kerr, he came out and said that, you know, Draymond Green damaged the culture that they have in Golden State. And, you know, this is obviously the biggest crisis that he's ever seen in his tenure as a head coach for Golden State. And he also added that, you know, during the practice that Draymond Green returned, there was no awkwardness. Ooh, Lord have mercy. He said that there was no awkwardness at practice and everything. So, you know, I had an opportunity to, you know, see Poole and Green on the court during the game, and they seem pretty straight. But you have to wonder, man, in the back of your mind, it's like Jordan Poole, he still has to feel some type of way, man. Like, I know they talked and everything like that, but it's still going to take, so I personally feel like it's still going to take some time, for them to really get back comfortable. That just doesn't happen and you just go business as usual, man. It's still some, for me, I think in Jordan Poole's, in the back of his mind, he still feels a way. I mean, and rightfully so, but here's the bottom line, man. Draymond should have been suspended. He should have been fined and suspended, like point blank period. I think that, the Warriors handled this way too soft. I mean, they handled this softly. Like, send a message, man. And I know, obviously they didn't want to suspend him because they wanted him to be a part of, the ring ceremony. Obviously that's what happens on opening night. They had a ceremony in front of the fans and everything like that. But it's like, man, like, I can understand, okay, yeah, let him be a part of that, but he still should have been suspended because I just think you need to send a message that this is not going to be tolerated. You know what I'm saying? Just having a talk and we're going to fine him and who knows how much that fine was, like maybe it was 10, 20,000, who knows? I mean, something that was like changed to him. But I just personally, I know that they came out and said that he was going through some things and stuff like that off the court, but it still doesn't give you the right to, haul off and knock somebody up. And I know Jordan Poole talk a lot of trash. Like, I know he runs his mouth, he talks a lot of trash, but it's like, this is your teammate, dog. Like, you laying out your teammate, And it's like, I don't know, a lot of people look at it and they're like, you know what, man, if I'm Jordan Poole, like, Draymond got to see me every practice and we fighting. Look, that is not about to happen. Like, every single practice, like, y'all could do that maybe off the court, but, like, practice, first of all, Jordan Poole wouldn't even do that. Like, I get people saying if it was you, you would do that. Okay, like, I'm not going to deny that, but Jordan Poole is obviously not about to keep doing that because the same thing would keep happening over and over again. It's like, how many times you want to keep getting laid out? Like, that wouldn't make any sense. But, you just got to think of it from a chemistry standpoint. Like, how is that going to – I see it, it looked cool in a preseason game, but, like, how is that going to translate when you get in the regular season, like, and that thought crosses your mind, like, man, this dude, he really knocked me out. Like, what's that? I'm just interested to see what the chemistry is going to look like, between the both of them going forward, which in turn affects the team. And like Steve Kerr said, the culture of the Warriors. So, if there was a situation where, because Jordan Poole could have easily came out and said, look, it's either him or me, and make them choose. But I obviously think that they would still choose Draymond Green over Jordan Poole just because, Draymond is like that Dennis Rodman of the Golden State Warriors. Like, he's not going to score all the points, but he's going to give you the maximum effort. He's going to get the tough rebounds. He's going to make the good passes. He's going to get the crowd energized and get the team hype on the sidelines. Maybe the games where they're struggling and he makes an and one or something. He provides that spark to Golden State. So I definitely think that he's one of the nucleuses of the team. So they wouldn't choose Poole over Draymond if there was a situation like that. But yeah, I just think that they handled this too soft and he definitely should have been suspended, man, to send a message. But hey, it is what it is. But we'll see what happens going forward, man. All right. And last but not least, man, let's talk about Saturday's biggest matchup, man, and my prediction for who's going to win. I'm talking about number 3 Bama at number 6 Tennessee. We're going to talk about who's going to win this game. So who's going to win this game and why? So let's look at the matchup with both Alabama and Tennessee. Let's see how they match up across the board. So Alabama's averaging 44 points a game currently. Tennessee's averaging 46 points a game. Bama has allowed 12.5 points per game. Tennessee's allowed 17. Alabama averages 504 total yards a game. Tennessee averages 547 yards a game, which is number one in the SEC. Alabama's allowed 250 yards a game to their opponents. Tennessee is allowed 396 yards a game. Alabama's going to win this game, y'all. Like, Alabama wins the game. A lot of people ask me why. Okay, so first and foremost, Bryce Young's going to be back. You know, Bryce set out, you know, obviously the second half of the game against Arkansas. Didn't play in last week's game against Texas A&M, but, you know, he has rested. They're saying he's a game-time decision. He did practice on a limited basis this week, but he did increase his reps in practice on Thursday and Friday to make him a game-time decision. But Bryce is going to play in this game, no doubt in my mind about it. You look at the wide receiver core, they're starting to come alive, you know, with JoJo Earl, who's back. You got Trey Burton, Trayshawn Holden, Brooks, Prentice, and Isaiah Bond. I think those group of wide receivers are starting to really, you know, piece it together. They're starting to really, you know, take their stride. And I think that they're obviously going to show up in this game on the road. And then, let's not forget about Tyler Harrell. Tyler Harrell is a guy who hasn't had an opportunity to play this year, transferred from Louisville. Look, big body wide receiver who's a deep threat. He has speed as well. He might see his first action against Tennessee this weekend. So definitely excited to see, you know, how he can be worked into the offense and how he can be utilized as a weapon that he is. And let's look at Jahmyr Gibbs. I mean, he's been very effective in the run and pass game, and I think he'll continue to be effective in this game against Tennessee. I mean, he's averaging eight yards per carry. Like I said before, earlier in the show, he's 532 yards, which is third in the SEC. And he also has 22 receptions on the year for 220 yards, and he's averaging 10 yards a catch. So you talk about Alvin Kamara 2.0, Jahmyr Gibbs is that, you know, and I'm just excited to see how, you know, they're going to utilize Jahmyr Gibbs in space, get him the ball, and allow him to make plays. And I think, you know, he's also been doing a really good job running the ball in between the tackles as well, you know, bouncing it outside. Jahmyr has been, he could do it all, you know, and I think that he's really, his breakout game against Arkansas, that's what really opened things up. And I think that he's going to show y'all, you know, he's going to put on the show. Now, defensively, man, let's look at, you know, Alabama's defense is always, of course, Kool-Aid McKinstry and Terrion Arnold. I think that they're becoming a nice duo, you know, a nice DB duo. And, you know, Kool-Aid is out there making plays. Terrion, who's struggling a little earlier in the season, he is starting to, you know, make more plays. I mean, he came up with a big stop in a critical moment when Texas A&M was on the two or three yard line. With opportunity to win the game on the last play, Terrion made a play, and we sealed the deal for Alabama to win the game. Now Tennessee, and I told my homeboy this, who's a diehard Tennessee fan. He's been talking all kind of trash to me all week. He's so excited because this is the biggest matchup between Tennessee and Alabama in years. So he's all hype. He's talking all this noise. I mean, I was talking to him earlier, and he was like, "You want to know what's so crazy?" And I was like, "What's up, bro?" "Man, how bad Tennessee is going to beat Alabama." And I'm like, "Really? Like, really?" I'm like, "Oh, so that's okay. So you're real confident right now." And what's funny to me is all of these analysts out here talking about, "Oh, Tennessee, you know, they have this electrifying offense, and you know, this is big concern for Alabama." And man, you would have thought Tennessee was the 85 Bears or something, the way that people are talking about them. Listen, man, look. Here's the biggest thing. Tennessee has not faced a monster like Alabama at all yet. I get Alabama hasn't, you know, faced a offense that's put up the type of numbers that Tennessee has been putting up this year necessarily, but Tennessee hasn't faced this explosive offense that Alabama has, and they haven't faced the defense like ours at all either. So let's not sit up here and act like Tennessee has just been running through all this tough competition. You know what I mean? Like, let's pump the brakes. Like, yeah, Tennessee is a good football team. This is the best team that they've had, in years. Probably since Josh Dobbs. Yeah, I think this is probably their best team since Josh Dobbs was there. But don't become a prisoner of the moment. Don't get too ahead of yourselves. And people out in Vegas, it's like 70 or 75% of the people in Vegas putting their money on Tennessee to win the game. Go ahead, man. Look, I want everybody, Paul Feinbaum, you know, who continues to say, oh, yeah, Alabama's in trouble. Look, I want all of y'all to keep that same energy. I want everybody to keep that same energy. Please keep it. Because we're just going to talk on the field like we always do. We're not going to do a whole lot of talking. We don't need to get into all of that. Like, this is Alabama. We don't trash talk. Like, we'll do whatever you need to do to get yourself hype and excited, but trust and believe. When it's time to get in between the lines, the boys will be ready. Like, I'm not worried about that. So, I know that. And I expect Tennessee to come out, you know, swinging. I expect them to come out energized, but I definitely expect Alabama to respond, and I expect Alabama to be up to the challenge. I definitely expect that. And for me, defensively, I just think that, you know, Alabama's defense, they're going to be able to put pressure on Hendon Hooker, make him uncomfortable in the pocket. I think they'll make him force some throws. And, you know, release the ball a lot quicker than he wants to, which can in turn, you know, lead to some turnovers. You know, I think that you got to watch out and be on the lookout for that cheetah package. And if you don't know what the cheetah package is, it's with Will Anderson, Dallas Turner, and Chris Braswell. Like, mark my words, watch out for it. Special package that they put together with those three players, and it's been unstoppable throughout the year. You know, so, like I said, man, I'm rolling with the tide as always. I might as well make a prediction on the other two games since I said that those are the biggest matchups. With the Michigan and Penn State game, I'm gonna rock with Michigan at home against Penn State, and then I'm gonna go with TCU to upset Oklahoma State. Can't leave y'all without giving you an upset. I was thinking about Penn State and Michigan, but I was like, I'll rock with Michigan. On that game. But yeah, give me TCU over Oklahoma State for the upset. And I'll rock with USC over Utah. I'll rock with them over Utah. So we'll see if I'm right next week. we'll definitely recap. But hey, man, I appreciate everybody give me, like I said, a bit of your time to talk some good, healthy sports talk, man. Again, continue to rock with me, man. Much love to all of my listeners out there, man. And hey, looking forward to this weekend, watching some great games, and looking forward to doing this thing all over again next week. So y'all stay tuned, man. Keep it locked. Peace, blessings, and as always, man, roll tide. I'm out.